Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and they're going to be your views for the next hour, because, of course, this is Open Line Wednesday. I might put a plug in for the fact that I'm going to be speaking at a conference up in Santa Rosa, the Eagle Forum Conference there on the 29th, Saturday the 29th of this month. I'll be speaking in Southern California on April 2nd and April 3rd, April 2nd in Orange County at the Denny's Restaurant on Huntington Beach, and the following evening in Tarzana at the Granada Forum. So if you're interested and need more information on any of those, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, our telephone number this evening, if you'd like to call us, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But perhaps we could discuss the fact that today is the fifth anniversary of America's entry into the war in Iraq. We're beginning now the sixth year of war. And it's simply another example of a no-win war that our military is not being allowed to win. It was just like the Korean War. We weren't allowed to win in Korea. We did everything we could to help the North Koreans and the Chinese communists when they came into the war. And if you've read General MacArthur's reminiscences or some of my newsletters, you'll find that we weren't allowed to either bomb the bridges across the Yalu or any of the power plants that were in North Korea, or we weren't even allowed to bomb the major supply centers of the Chinese communists in North Korea. We weren't having to go into Chinese territory at all. Why would they not allow us to bomb the supply centers of the Chinese communists who were killing our boys? Why, but same reason, of course, that in Vietnam we wouldn't let the military bomb the supply centers at Haiphong, where the equipment was coming in. We allowed the communist ships or ships to use the Mekong River to take supplies to the Viet Cong. We couldn't block the harbor there at Haiphong. We couldn't sink a ship in the mouth of the harbor, as the French had done during their war with the communists. We couldn't bomb the rail lines out of Haiphong. We weren't allowed to bomb the energy plants there and electric generating plants in North Vietnam and the dikes and flood the country and end the war. Everything was done to keep the war going, just as it's being done in Iraq today. And the American people don't understand. This is another no-win war. Our boys are fighting bravely over there. But, of course, they're not allowed to win. And if you doubt that, you go to my website, radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com, and get my December 2007 newsletter. It is a speech that was given by General Ricardo Sanchez, who actually commanded the coalition forces in Iraq from June of 2003 to June of 2004, and read what he has to say about how they've been consistently blocked and prevented from winning the war. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on begins to make sense. We have no intention of winning the war. We need an excuse to keep our troops there indefinitely. That's just what's going to happen. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go to Jerry, who's calling from Medical Lake in Washington. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
Okay. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I got questions and comments.
All right, fine. Are you on a regular hardline phone there?
What?
Are you on a regular hardline phone?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
You had a guy that was going to give us talk on the Illuminati a couple of weeks ago.
Hold that thought.
Have you ever been able to get a hold of him?
No, I never was able to get hold of him. Whatever happened to his telephone line, I don't know. He did contact me afterwards and said, well, they'd had trouble with their telephones, but I know I've never put him on. I just don't know whether he is actually who he claims he is. This is the problem with the people who say they've been part of the Illuminati. I would think if they had been part of the Illuminati and had come out, they would kill them. But I don't know whether maybe the man is legitimate. I have no way of knowing.
Another question. You had Barbara Dombrowski and a guy named Youngen. How do you spell Youngen?
Y-U-N-G-E-N, I believe, is the spelling.
Okay. And then you had another guy on Lynn somebody.
It could be Y-O-U-N, Youngen.
Y-O-U-N, okay.
But maybe that'll be better spelling of it. And then what was the other question?
Yes, you had a guy on about 2 weeks ago, Lynn somebody. How do you spell his name?
Marzulli, M-A-R-Z-U-L-L-I.
I record all your programs. The ones you don't get, I buy, and I make copies and sell to, or don't sell, I give to friends.
Well, we appreciate that so much,
and,
Jerry. Lynn Marzulli actually is a minister. And since Lynn Marzulli is a minister. We didn't bring that out, but he, of course, from his studies...
Are you familiar with David Weber?
Beg pardon?
Are you familiar with David Weber, Southwest Radio Church?
Well, I'm acquainted with Southwest Radio Church, but I don't know David Weber.
They had a program on, two programs on the Illuminati back in 1976 or 78. I was going to send them to you if you want.
All right. All right, fine. Certainly I know and admire, Noah Hutchings. I think he does a great job. I know everybody on the staff there. We've worked with him many times. My wife says that Youngen's name is Y-U-N-G-E-N, Youngen.
Okay, Y-U-N-G-E-N.
Right.
Okay, it's being recorded, so I've got it.
Okay, fine. And certainly
okay,
he's a very dedicated person. We carry a couple of his books.
What?
We carry a couple of his books. Who is, I think, and if you're interested, why, of course, you can just look up on our website and get the names of them.
Uh-huh.
So, and I thought that was a fascinating program about this Moses Code that they're pushing into the church today. But all of these, of course, to bring us into, into contemplative prayer and these various mantras, which really open us up for demonic possession.
It does.
Okay, anything else you'd like
to ask? No, that'll take care of it. Other than you might spell everybody's name or when you get your guests on. Help. I think there are a lot of other people that make CDs and give away, too.
Well, actually, they're up on the website.
I don't have a computer. I'm in the hospital, and we don't have computers. I can't get them.
Okay, God bless. Thanks so much, Jerry.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Jane calling from Sacramento. This is Open Line Wednesday. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Oh, good. It's John again finally after a couple of...
Just speak up, please. Go
ahead.
Well,
I'd like to see if we, if you can comment or if anyone else may know a little bit more about the nature of these public-private partnerships. I know that when we were up at your conference back in October, you had Micah Shaw there, and
right.
He had alluded a little bit to the stuff about property, but these partnerships were really of concern because in my church they were putting forth a proposal to go help out at a migrant camp outreach in August, and they had mentioned that the umbrella group that is helping in this had actually started its own nonprofit entity apart from the State Convention of the Southern Baptists, so that they could participate in these state-sponsored migrant camps without any church-state conflict, quote-unquote.
All right, fine. Well, most of the public-private partnerships are simply where you have people, private people, making agreements with the government, and they work together on specific goals. And certainly, for instance, under Agenda 21, which is really is the fancy name for the agenda for the 21st century, there is a plan. What they want to do is get into sustainable housing. Now, what that really means is the developers will be given money or given a special bonus to build sustainable units. The whole idea is you would have a multi-level building, and of course, see, in the upper level is where the people would live in small, concise apartments where they could be monitored, and then usually on the first floor of the building where you'd have the business affairs taking place and work on there, and then the lower floor would be the shopping, the malls there, and these would be sustainable communities, and we could then get people living there, we could get them out of their cars, we could then watch them all the time, monitor them all the time, control everything that they did. This is an example of a public-private partnership. Of course, what you saw of corporate socialism under Mussolini was basically a public-private partnership where industry worked with government for the common goals. The capitalists made the money, and the fascist element was able to control everything. And, of course, each one vying for power. But when you vie for power with government, sometimes you find out that you end up with the short end of the string. But that's what public-private partnerships are all about. Certainly, this organization that you're speaking of, that your church wants to become affiliated with, certainly it's a wonderful thing to help the migrant farm workers. Certainly many of these people are deprived. But certainly just helping them without, of course, bringing them into a personal relationship with Jesus Christ or trying to minister to them or talking to them about Christianity, I think is counterproductive, because Jesus was not simply a do-gooder or a Marxist trying to improve the lot of people. He was trying to transform their lives. And unfortunately, we see an awful lot of people today who, in the name of Christianity, are really pushing Marxism and socialism.
Well, that was my concern. Apparently, the state had asked for the involvement of the association or this organization. I don't know what name they're going under. And I'm only suspect when the state solicits our involvement or help, because that's like, isn't that a little bit like you're saying that, well, what the state endorses or finances, it will ultimately control anyway?
You're absolutely right. And Chris, there was this whole idea, what we want to do is involve faith-based organizations and in helping people, and so we're going to give them money, and they'll just turn their back on preaching Christianity and get out there to be good little social workers and help people. Well, I think that we should all try to help people, but the biggest help we can give to anybody is a personal relationship with our Lord. So, I mean, they're using all of these various techniques to neutralize Christianity, to water it down to the point where you become no different than any Marxist out there pushing these do-good ideas or humanistic ideas. But, of course, that's not what we're called to do.
Oh, boy. So we should stay far away from, but I'm not going to be able to convince them, certainly. So
you're probably not going to, but all you can do is tell them what's going on and then just not participate and point out that what they're doing is sacrificing their principles for popularity.
Well, if there's any unincorporated fellowship going on out there, hey, I want to join it.
All right, fine. Anything else, Jane, before we let you go?
All right.
God bless. Thanks so very much. And let's, of course, now go to Anthony, who's calling from Rock Springs, Wyoming. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hi, Anthony. How you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. How are you doing? I'm doing just fine. I finally called in the right time slot. I'm not even listening tonight, but I remembered this is Wednesday, and I was hoping to get a hold of you because I wanted to chat with you a little bit about what's going on with Barack Obama. Have you been following the sound bites and everything they've been playing on television?
You're talking about from his reverend, his minister?
Yeah.
In fact, yeah. I have, and certainly he certainly doesn't present things in a very Christian manner, asking people to damn America. Now, certainly he's a political activist, and certainly the minister, some of what he says is true. But what he's doing is creating racial division. And black against white and white against black. Because certainly his remarks, you know, about how the country's owned by rich white guys, you know, is that certainly doesn't tend to make white people feel good about black people. Now, certainly there's an element of truth, and there is discrimination against blacks, and we could get into a lot of the very real racial problems we see today, but approaching them from that point of view rather than from a point of view of logic and concern, you know, is totally counterproductive. And I certainly think that this minister, it actually does a disservice to the black population, and certainly does a disservice to Obama's candidacy.
Yeah, I believe he does too. I just spent a wonderful weekend in Ohio. The trip was unfortunate because my father-in-law passed away, so I went to bury him, and my wife was raised by a black man who married her mother after she was born, and she was the only white lady that went to school with all the kids and everything. She got treated pretty poorly, but I tell you what, I spent a beautiful weekend with fellowshipping with people. That we went to a concert and everything afterwards, and they were part of the concert. It was really great, and I was the only white person there, me and my wife. And there are a lot of folks that are treated just like family, you know, it's wonderful. But what I'd like to say is the man said something that caught my ear, and I'm not sure you heard this sound bite. I may not agree with any other thing that the guy said, the pastor, Barack Obama's pastor, don't remember his name, but he did say the government lied to us about 9/11, the government lied to us about AIDS, and the government lied to us about, what is it, the Tuskegee report? Is that the one you talk about frequently?
Yeah, the Tuskegee experiment, the Tuskegee program. Right, right. And he was absolutely right. In fact, when I listened to some of the things he was saying, I agreed with the context, but I objected violently with certainly the way he was saying it, because it was it tended upon breeding hatred of America. Now, I love this country, and I think it's the greatest country in the world, but what we need to do is take it back from the evil people who have taken it over, not try to destroy it. And his theme was to destroy the nation. And when he says, God damn America, that is certainly not a remark at all that anybody who loved this country would say. Certainly, you can be critical of it because you love it. And certainly, if you love your children, you can be critical of your children. If you love your parents, but you have a right to be critical of your parents, but it's how you say it. And what he was saying was, the technique that he was using was totally counterproductive. And if you wanted to engender hatred of this country on the part of the black population, you couldn't do a better job. And perhaps, as I listened to those clips, I remember Obama's wife had said now for the first time she was proud of America. It's something to do with her husband's candidacy. And I thought, you know, even though I disagree with so much of what America has done, you know, during the last 50 years, that doesn't mean that I don't love this country and I want to try to preserve it. Obviously, she's been listening to those Reverend Wright's sermons for too long.
Sounds to me, I don't want to condone anything the man said, but there is some truth in that statement about those three things, and that's what caught my ear. And the thing is now, that statement there, just if you isolate that from everything else, has been brought to the forefront on national news media, and I think somehow we need to open up for discussion the truth in what he was saying.
But you see, what you have to understand is when he says it the way he does, in the context of what he does, he tends to discredit what he's saying. I personally believe that the AIDS epidemic was created in our own military laboratories, or certainly within the laboratories in America, and it is aimed at targeting blacks. But I say this, I would try to come up with scientific evidence of it, and we have the evidence. It's an article I wrote. Anybody like to see it? It's an article I wrote for the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons. We'll be glad to provide it and explain why this disease targets blacks. But what I would say, I would not try to antagonize people. And I agree with you. Much of what he said was true, but he only tends to discredit the very views he's expressing. Hang on there just a minute. We'll be right back with Anthony. Anthony, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, just that we need to find a way, Dr. Stan, to take our media back. Years ago, I'm educated in radio television. That was one of my emphasis of study at San Francisco State University and when I went to City College of San Francisco. And in those days, and I'm talking about in the 70s, early 70s, we could challenge a radio station's license every 3 years for not serving the public interest. We have to find a way. Our radio stations, the media, is not serving the public interest. And we need to start attacking some of these people holding licenses so we can take our media back.
But you see, if we do that, Anthony, why they're going to attack stations that carry my programs, and then we wouldn't have a voice at all. No, I think what we need to do is use the Internet, use the alternative radio, and be willing to finance the people, whether it be my ministry or the ministry of the other people who are out there. And I can give you the name of a dozen people who are out there doing a great job. I mean, John Leffler is doing a great job. Jeff Rentz is doing a great job. Alex Jones is doing a great job. Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer Pastor Butch Paw and so many of the people are doing a great job. Joyce Riley. So we need to support the people, but we don't want more government control. Admittedly,
no. The way it works, though, is if you challenge a license for not serving in the public interest, that means you get the first opportunity to buy that frequency, and you buy it at the price from the FCC. You don't buy it at the open market price.
And I think that would be the worst thing in the world. If we had what you would be doing would be opening this thing up so that there would be no voice on the other side, because believe me, they would organize. I've seen them do this. They did this in Hawaii many years ago, and they took the only conservative station there off the air. How do you feel about that?
Well, I really think that we can take the stations back and turn them into real stations.
Believe me, Anthony,
just like what you're doing.
Anthony, I don't believe it would work. You can do it if you want to, but I would not. I certainly won't have more government looking over my shoulder. We have a small station. I don't want the government monitoring that. I don't want them monitoring the other stations we're on, because they would be able to get us off of every station. I've seen this under the fairness doctrine that they had. In fact, I talked to Dan Smoot many years ago, and he had programs on stations all across America. And under the fairness doctrine, why they were able to get him off of every one of those stations by giving the government the opportunity to harass the stations. I know you mean well, but I just tend to disagree with you.
I understand, but what I'm going to do is... maybe I can. I don't think you see quite my point of view, but I understand where you're coming from. But I think it can work a little bit different than that, where the people take control of their airwaves again, rather than the government controlling them the way it is now. And so, anyway, I'll let you move on. And thank you so much. Nice chatting with you. It's been a while, it's about time I order some more books and tapes. So
all right, fine.
I'll be sending you an order.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to Carol, who's calling from Martinez. And once again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Carol from Martinez. How are you doing?
Good. Hi, Dr. Stan. I want to thank you for your program and all the excellent information you provide us.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is Open Line Wednesday. We welcome your calls. And right now we have Carol calling from Martinez, and she was just thanking us for the programs, and I appreciate knowing you're out there listening, Carol, and I hope you can get other people listening as well.
I'm trying. I heard the tail end of your broadcast today concerning
older people. Well, you're going to have to repeat that. We're having a little problem. Let me just
try. Okay. I heard the tail end of your broadcast yesterday.
Hold just a moment, Carol. I got to do a little adjusting here. Okay, go ahead. Are you on a cell phone because your voice is breaking
yes,
up?
Yes, I am. I wonder if I could...
Do you have a regular
maybe
cell phone there?
I could call in on a different line if I can.
Right, I think you better call in on a different line. I would love to talk to you, but your voice is breaking
okay.
up.
Okay. I'll call on another
well,
line.
Well, try that. Try this for a minute. Let's see how it goes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I heard broadcast about children being taken away from their parents by confidential court proceedings.
Yes, that was Senator Nancy Schaefer, who's a state legislator in Georgia, talking about the child abuse industry and how often children are taken away from their parents and they're many times even put up for adoption. Families are being destroyed because the federal government subsidizes the destruction of the family through the so-called child abuse or child protection agency. They're not protecting children, they're destroying families, and they do far more harm than they do good. Anything else, Carol?
Well, I
think probably, why don't you try getting on a hard line, you call us right back and we'll get you
okay.
on.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go to Mike who's calling. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I want to talk about this Obama thing, and not for the sake of talking about it, but we're talking about the way that we're being abused in the media. This thing has gone on and on, I think for 4 days now at least,
right.
this current thing. And let's look back over the recent weeks and months. One story after another, petty non-stories, really. The Larry Craig thing, and the Michelle Obama thing, and the New York Times McCain non-story. Britney Spears is sprinkled in everywhere. They need some filler. And then we had Elliot Spitzer, and then Geraldine Ferraro mixes herself, and then Reverend Wright and the Obama thing. This is really taking up such an inordinate amount of time. Each one of these stories goes on for 2, 3, and 4 days, taking up the bulk of radio talk time and nationwide. And they could each be dealt with in a succinct and a straightforward way. And then they can move on. And you notice one person who's not being talked about through all this, the other Democratic presidential candidate, Hillary, she's just sort of sitting around grinning like a Cheshire cat and letting everybody else take care of the dirty work, and she just sort of watches from the sidelines as I think this is really a CFR operation to move him into the vice presidential position. Nobody really needs to worry about him becoming president. He's not, but she will. And that's the problem, and nobody's looking at it. Why? Because of the media. Look where they've got our focus.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. We're being manipulated, as always. We're not talking about any of the main issues. Have you noticed that very seldom now on television do they show us the pictures of the slaughter going on over in Iraq or the terrible tragedy that's befallen the Iraqi people and the fact that, you know, there are over 2 million Iraqis who are refugees in their own country. Another 2 million are living in other countries. Over 1 million probably have been killed. Some people say 1.3 million. And, of course, our casualty list is growing, not simply those that are killed, but those who come back without arms and legs and sight. But we don't talk about that. We talk about Britney Spears. We talk about Obama's minister. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
They control the reality of the American people. They play games with our minds. And, unfortunately, most people do not understand that the media is controlled, according to Professor Ben Bagdakian, why 90 to 95% of the major outlets in America are controlled by one of 5 major corporations, and believe me, they all interlock into the brotherhood of darkness. Their goal, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. Oh, anything else, Mike?
One thing, if I could hold on to the music.
Go right ahead.
I'll go ahead. For the lady who was talking and asking about public-private partnership.
Right.
A while ago. We need to understand how the Illuminati work. And there are so many organizations, especially churches, who are really opposed to the goals and purposes of the Illuminati.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Mike. You were just saying that many churches were opposed to the Illuminati, but I don't think most of the churches are already aware of how it is manifested today, and whether we call it the Illuminati, we call it the Brotherhood of Darkness, or we call it the occult forces working within the church. They're all pretty much the same.
Yeah. Well, we just need to understand one thing about how they operate. Now, the church, you would think, would be, you know, well, it's true. It's the greatest opposition to the religion of the Illuminati. And but the Illuminati are smarter than to just go and try and destroy the church and get rid of it. Number one, that would take a huge effort for them to do that. And number two, what they see, they're very smart. What they see in the church is a perfectly good organization that's already in place and functioning, and it just needs a little adjustment. All they have to do, really, is just take out the clear teachings of the Bible, and then they can take it over and make it into something that's very useful to them. That's how they got started out originally with Freemasonry. Freemasonry was an okay organization. It had some problems, but it suited the purposes of the Illuminati perfectly in the beginning, and they just went and took it over, infiltrated, and turned it into something that was completely useful to them. And now that they've really gotten control of our government, and they'll go around and offer money to whatever organization they want. They'll do it through a foundation or through some tax exempt status or outright funding. And once you take the money, you also take the hook, like a worm on a hook for a fish, a hungry fish. Once you bit that hook, you've been had, and they'll let you. Well, I guess I could say they'll either put you in their frying pan and eat you, or they'll put you in their aquarium. Either way, you belong to them. And the churches these days are completely at fault for becoming involved. The 501c3s, you may as well call them a public-private partnership.
All right, but certainly I think that most people really don't understand what's going on, and I agree with you. They've targeted the church. It's much easier to destroy the church from within than from without. They've changed the music of our churches. They've changed the message of the churches, and they're bringing in all these new and great ideas. Contemplative prayer. Certainly the Moses Code, certainly meditation, yoga. All these occult practices are in the Christian church today. Hey, Mike,
okay.
It's good to hear from you, and thanks very much for calling right here at Radio Liberty. And right now, let's go to Carol, who's calling back, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is Open Line Wednesday, and if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But Carol from is back again. This is Carol from Martinez. The next caller is Carol from Fort Thomas, Kentucky. But let's go to Carol from Martinez. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Dr. Steve.
Okay, it sounds much better. Go ahead.
The reason I was calling is I am a homeschool mom. Both my daughters have graduated from college, so I'm not homeschooling anymore. But just recently, on February 28th, the state of California made homeschool illegal unless you were a certified teacher.
Well, that was a decision of a couple of judges. So, whether they're going to try to enforce that, I don't know. What have you heard?
Well, if homeschool legal defense at hslda.org is asking people to sign their petition to support homeschool freedom in California, as of about an hour ago, they had 253,000 signatures. So you don't need to homeschool to sign that, and they're actually going to fight this, and they're working on it right now. The family that was that this originated from, it was a confidential juvenile court proceeding. The family was represented by court-appointed attorneys, and HSLDA did not become aware of it until it had been published. So I'm encouraging, if you have any homeschool families out there who are homeschooling right now and not part of HSLDA, they should join HSLDA, because it's only $115 a year, and all their legal If let's say they do have a court case, and they have joined HSLDA, there are no further charges of any kind for defending them in court.
And that's homeschool legal defense.
Right.
And they do a good job. Certainly Mike Ferris does a good job. And certainly we are having Brad Dacus on the 1st of April from the Pacific Legal Foundation. He'll be talking about it as well. So we have a good team out there. And I think everybody should be up in arms, because what they really want is the souls of our children. Don't give it to them. Anything else, Carol, before we let you go?
No, I just encourage everyone. I know you have a good homeschool program that you sell, and I just encourage people who are thinking of it to realize there's a lot of support groups out there to help them, and a lot of people that will come alongside and help them through that process. And my children have done great. They both graduated, as I said, and they love learning and they love education. And so I'm just putting in a
plug for it. And you, I bet you were a good teacher.
Well, I did my best, and I also got a lot of, if there was a parent who, like, was really good in one field, we'd bring our kids over there, and we did share things that we could do. And the girls were hard workers, and they weren't, like, geniuses, but they both graduated magna cum laude from Pepperdine and UCLA. So
you are to be congratulated for making the sacrifice and for everything you did. Hey, we're going to let you go. God bless, and thanks for what you're doing.
Okay.
And
Sonny, thank
I agree
you
with you
for what you do.
Homeschool legal defense is very, very important.
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye. And let's go to Carol from Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Hi, Carol. How are you doing?
I'm so glad I could hear you talking and say my name. I was afraid I wouldn't. I bet I couldn't hear you on my phone.
Okay, do you have a question?
But I do now, and I'm calling to verify that you do not lie. The fairness doctrine kept Dan Smoot off of film,
right,
radio, and he has not been gone for very long, but he's done all kinds of reports on the fairness doctrine, and we're going down to Texas A&M and get all of his films. We're in the process. So you'll get to see them pretty soon.
Hey, if you do, I would really appreciate it. Maybe we could even help get them distributed. I think that, you know, I had some of those films, and I actually, at one point in my life, got rid of them. And now I look back and I say, what a terrible mistake that was.
Well, that's right. I had seven of them, and Bill McElhaney has those seven. And but I didn't have the rest, because I didn't know how many he had done.
Well, if you get them, you let us know, and we'll work to get them out.
I'm so excited because I finally found somebody that will go down to Texas A&M, and they'll have to go in and use the reels there. They're on the reels yet.
Right, but
so somebody will help them transfer them.
We need to get them on DVD, and we'll be glad to get them out.
I
had a wonderful opportunity to talk to Dan before he passed away. In fact, I always felt we were partly responsible for bringing him out of a depression. He went into a great depression, and I called him. I asked him in 1980 if he'd come to Greenville, South Carolina, to do some filming with me, and he said, I'll have to ask my wife.
Yeah.
Dan Smoot's got to ask his wife what he can do.
Well,
then, of course, he said he'd come. I said, how much do you want to come? How much do you want? He said, I don't want anything. You pay my way, I'll come.
Yeah.
Well, when he came back, when we met at the airport.
Well, he's wonderful. I've talked to him over the years.
Well, when we met him at the airport, he really started to come out of his depression. And we had a wonderful couple of days.
Right.
And by the time he left, the depression, which had been plaguing him for months, it lifted. And he, after that, he went back on the speaking tour and was a wonderful influence in America.
Well, of course, he's been on the speaking tour for the John Birch Society.
Right.
A long time.
Anyway, God bless you. Please let me know as soon as you get them, Carol.
I'm excited. I think we're going to do it.
All right, God. Thanks very much. Okay, let's next go to, I guess this is Susan in Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you're younger, you probably don't recognize the name of Dan Smoot, but for about a four-year period, from about 1960 to 1964, being actually the financed by a gentleman who had a Dr. Ross dog food. Dan Smoot had television programs all across America and was really beginning to educate the American people about our freedom and how it was we were being lost. And then the government came after him with the freedom doctrine, so-called freedom doctrine, which is aimed at suppressing freedom and forced the stations to stop carrying him. But Dan wrote the book, The Invisible Government. His reports are excellent, and someday I wish I had a chance just to reduplicate all those and make them available to you, because we have all of them. Well, anyway, let's go to Susan, calling from Santa Cruz. Susan, do you remember Dan Smoot?
I've heard his name, but I don't really remember a lot about him.
All right, fine. Will you go ahead? Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I have a number of comments. I think perhaps an example of a security and private partnership is the 501c3 that churches are on. That's the tax-exempt form where they take a government exemption from taxes in exchange for silence, which that's kind of my soapbox. I think that's an unconscionable thing for the churches to be doing. What do you think, Dr. Stan?
I agree with you. Actually, they don't have to take 501c3 to be tax-exempt. You can actually declare your ministry, and people can give to you if you're not 501c3. But they've been talked into it, and I believe, of course, at a terrible, terrible price. And actually, we were 501c3. We gave up our 501c3 status because we wanted to be able to tell people the truth.
Well, good for you. That's wonderful. I understand Pastor Chuck Baldwin, he's kind of a political conservative and very outspoken on the web, and I think he's looking for other pastors that are willing to speak out. I think he calls it the Black Regiment.
He does. That really goes back to the time of the American Revolution, where it was the ministers who were many times leading their congregations in preparation for the Revolutionary War to make America a free Christian nation. And it did work for a while. But Chuck Baldwin, down there in Pensacola, Florida, good friend and doing a great job.
Yeah. Speaking of the media, the gentleman before was talking about the radio shows, and, you know, there is something that has come to my attention that is called BreakTheMatrix.com, and that is a group of people that I guess originated from Ron Paul supporters that want to get together alternative news, television, and radio and web programs to counter what you see every day. And eventually, they're just asking for interest and pledges. And then I guess eventually would sell it publicly. So that's something people can check out.
All right, fine. Anything else?
Yes, I understand that Dr. Ron Paul is going to start an organization to continue after the campaign some of his, you know, revolution kind of principles that he's already started in his campaign. And that's for people to keep it abreast on. Also, I know you had a gentleman on, Jim Williams, was it, talking about the real ID?
Right. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but we've had a number of people on the Real ID Act. The last one was Arlene Kula. But go right ahead. I'm very concerned about the fact that they want to convert our driver's license into a government ID card.
Right. Well, I have some news that I can't say I can be sure it's true yet, but I understand a gentleman named Mark Lerner used to work on this Real ID Act for the government, I assume, and he stopped working on it when he realized that it was not a national ID card, it was an international, supposed to be, eventually would be used as an international ID card.
Could very well be true.
Yeah, so that's a concern for a lot of people that are stepping up now to stop that. And
I think what people have to understand is we're moving towards a police state. We've got a great DVD on this subject, and they're installing the video cameras everywhere. They're not interested in crime, they're interested in tracking people. Certainly they're using our credit cards, and if you have a grocery card, everything you buy is being tracked. Every place you go on the Internet, if you go on the Internet, they're tracking where you go.
Yeah.
They've actually made arrangements so that your cell phone, the new cell phones, Even if you turned off, they can listen to your conversation. Even if it's turned off, they can track where you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, why are they doing this? Because they want to control people. They're setting up dossiers on every citizen in the United States in the name of preventing the wicked Osama bin Laden from taking our freedom. And remember, of course, that after 9/11, after the 9/11 attack, there were a number of members of Osama bin Laden's extended family in the United States, and they all got special treatment and allowed to leave the country immediately. Why did they get special treatment? What's the relationship between our government and Osama bin Laden's family? Anyway, anything else you wanted to say there before I let you go?
No, just that is the primary concern, I think, right now, because they're trying to implement that quickly, and now's the time to step up and stop that real ID.
I agree with you, and certainly we would suggest everybody, of course, get hold of their state legislatures, because it's being mediated through the state, not through the federal government. And there is a resolution now before the state assembly and the state senate saying that we will not go along with that as a state. Let's hope we can do it. Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, Dr.
God bless. And let's go to Leilani here in Santa Cruz. Hi, Leilani.
Hi.
You have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I know that most of your listeners realize that the Federal Reserve isn't federal, but I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of your insight on what you think they've been doing lately on this bailout, and if that, in fact, means that they're trying to set something else in motion to give them even more power at a later time.
Well, I think that what they're doing, of course, is destroying the value of the our currency. And the idea of actually lowering interest rates and pouring more money in the into the economy basically is lowering the value of the dollar. The dollar has lost at least 40% of its value, if not more, over the last several years in relationship to a basket of currency, and we could lose another 50%. They could make the dollar completely worthless. Now, they've been doing this for a long time, but you see, I believe there's an agenda behind much of what is going on, because what they really want is a one-world government. Now, how can you have a one-world government if every country has their own independent currencies and has their own sovereignty? Well, the best thing in the world, from their point of view, would be a global currency, and I think that's what they really want. They're going to destroy our currency, impoverish our people, and then, of course, create the global currency. And people will be so desperate for something that has stability as, of course, inflation rages out of control and people really don't have the money to buy gasoline. They don't have the money to buy electricity and natural gas and food. And they'll welcome the promise of a stable currency and a return to normal times in return for giving up their freedom. And I really believe that this is an effort to do away with the domestic currency and bring about a global currency. I think that's what it's all about. I'm not a prophet, but this is everything points in that direction. Anything else, Leilani?
No, I agree with you, and I appreciate your insight. I enjoy your program and keep up with the good work. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Thanks so very much. Well, let's go to Ron, who's calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yeah, I used to listen to Dan Smoot when I was in high school in California in 1964.
Right, and he was a wonderful, wonderful patriot.
Well, you know, I was pretty naive, and I was just curious about that, and I somewhat skeptical about some of the things he said. And
but they were all true.
Yes. Well, my history teacher, who was a very good, very nice fellow, but he was somewhat of a socialist, and he just used to mock Dan Smoot, and most of the students, of course, would go right along with that, pretty gullible.
No, don't feel bad. I used to be a socialist myself, so I understand. Socialists aren't bad people; they're just not very smart.
Well, and by the way, I want to take issue with what one of your previous callers said.
All right.
And they were complaining about the media making a big deal about Obama's pastor and that. Our problem is theological. If our pastors are so deceived, or maybe wicked themselves, like this guy Wright, and really twist the gospel. I never heard the gospel from this guy. I heard a lot of hate Whitey, which will end up balkanizing our populace, which I think is exactly what the one worlders want to do, the balkanize their populace to take us down. He ought to be leading people into righteousness. The problem is sin.
You're right, absolutely.
And
right.
He ought to be defining that the Bible is very specific about sin. He ought to be leading them to the Lord and fighting sin.
You're absolutely right. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And a lot of our ministers don't really understand there's a battle going on.
Well, or they've joined up on the wrong side.
Well, be that we don't know what their motivation is. What we want to do is try to convince them to come along with us and get back to the fundamentals of the Bible. Get back
yes,
to
sir.
The
well,
teaching of the very simple gospel and get away from a lot of the things that they're into today, which are entertainment and promotion. But the gospel is a pretty simple message.
Well, it means we're a sinner, and some people don't believe that. Well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling. That was Ron calling from Richland. And we'll be back here in just a minute to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, we've got Carol calling from... where are you calling from, Carol?
Fort Thomas, Kentucky.
Now, go ahead.
Okay. Now, I have to tell you what Ron Paul is doing.
Right, okay.
We get to vote for him because our primary doesn't come on until May. So I can vote for him, which makes me happy.
Now, do you have
Ron Paul is promoting the Liberty Amendment, which is a very interesting story. It was written in 1944. It would get us out of the United Nations. How about that? All of our so-called laws come from the United Nations.
And I think
or world government.
Well, certainly the Liberty Amendment, it also was going to do away with income tax, as I remember.
It does. There's three legislative hits that we took in 1933. We took the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, and the Federal Reserve.
Right.
So that's exciting. I am so glad to hear that.
Well, I think Ron Paul is a very, very courageous man.
He
and,
is.
And I think we need to pray for him, pray for his safety. And
I hope he doesn't win, which he's not going to. I mean, for president, that would really be a miracle. But I just think that the federal government, that Washington, is a very dangerous place to be.
I think it is, especially when you're a conservative and you love the Lord.
That's right. Well, I my son-in-law was in the Commerce Department, and he came home to Texas, and I was glad that he got out of there.
Right. Anyway, well, thank you so very much for calling, Carol, and I hope that things are going to be the battle is not over until it's over, and this will be going on through November.
I know we're going to win.
All right. Well, we may be in for some tough times, but our job is to stay the course.
That's true.
Good night, and God bless.
I'm so glad to hear you, and I'm hoping we'll get you on a better station here in Cincinnati.
I hope you can, too. Good night,
okay.
God bless. And let's go to Jack calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are you doing? Jack, are you there?
I understand.
Hey, got a quick question or comment?
Well, relative to the homeschoolers, they need to check out BobPlimpton.com. BobPlimpton.com, click on the blue bar. I don't have a computer, but this is what the librarian told me, and that gets you into his 20-year due diligence treaties. You were born free, now you can live free because...
Jack, is Bob Plimpton still alive? Because we got a letter from his wife saying he had passed away.
No, I just heard from him again today.
Okay, fine. Well, I guess then as Mark Twain said, the suggestion I'm dead is rather premature. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
I'll tell him you said that.
Okay, hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Jack on the line from Michigan talking about a friend of ours, Bob Plimpton. And would you ask Bob to give me a call then as well? Because we stopped sending him material because we were told that he'd passed away.
Let me say this real quickly, Dr. Stan. In the Constitution, the 13th Amendment, it actually implies rather cleverly that voluntary servitude is all well and good, and it qualifies it by saying subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. How does one make oneself subject to the jurisdiction of the United States? By virtue of the birth certificate, the marriage license, the recording of the property deed, which are all voluntary, and not mandatory.
I've heard Bob's explanation, but certainly, if you do not record a marriage that is not a legal marriage, then certainly the woman could very well be left with nothing. Hey, we're going to have to run out of time, Jack.
We'll
talk more again. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time. Well, I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we would appreciate your help. If you are in a position to help us, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927 and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like to get a free newsletter or a free catalog of either the regular products or the emergency food catalogs or the health products, give us a call. And, of course, we have all of these things, actually, so we can continue having our outreach across America, which is almost 60 outlets by the time we get through with the various Internet and satellite programs and the program time that we buy on stations across America. I wish we had a lot more. A lot of it's only half an hour a week, but at least we have a voice out there. And what we're trying to get people to do is to question everything. Nothing as it appears to be. We're fighting in Iraq, and we're not trying to win the war. And when you understand that, well, you can understand that this is why the war drags on and on and on. Our boys are fighting very bravely, just like they did over in Vietnam, just exactly as they did in Korea. But they were never allowed to win those wars. And when you understand that, why everything begins to make sense. Understand that there really are sinister and evil forces out there. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to see the CD or the DVD of the talk, why, it's up on our webpage at radioliberty.com. In fact, it was as a result of that talk that I was asked to write the book, and we did, and certainly it was a wonderful opportunity to organize my thoughts and make them available to people around the world. And we're in about our 10th printing on Brotherhood of Darkness. You need, of course, to listen to my talk entitled The Forbidden Secret. That's The Forbidden Secret. You need, of course, to get our 4-tape set on the supernatural, our 4-tape set on the secret behind the secret. You certainly need to see Joe Simmel's excellent DVDs, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And then, of course, on an entirely different subject, if you want to know how they're poisoning our people, you need to get Dr. David Abe's excellent DVD, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda, because mercury is being used as part of the global population agenda by some of the wealthiest people in the world who support both worldwide vaccination of children to help the little children and worldwide population control to kill off and sterilize our children throughout the world. Who would do anything that evil? Well, you need to see the video. Mercury Autism, the Global Population Agenda. You need, of course, to get the material we have on water fluoridation, which is, of course, my talk on the hidden agenda. And then, of course, the syllabus that goes with that gives you the documentation. Incidentally, if you get Dr. David Ayoub's DVD, you get a CD-ROM along with it for nothing, with literally thousands of pages of documentation on the dangers of mercury, which they're using to poison our pregnant women and poison our children. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Please, our number 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for this next hour, the views of Barry Shamish, and I hope he's going to tell us the story of Jonathan Pollard. Now, for those of you who don't remember, Jonathan Pollard worked for the Defense Department. I believe he worked in the Department of Navy. And, of course, he was feeding information through to Israel, who is supposedly our ally. And he was feeding them information which supposedly they were entitled to as our ally. And yet, of course, he was arrested and sent to prison for life. Well, certainly I don't agree with what he did. But the question is, why was he sent to prison for life? Certainly, why have they been able not to work out some sort of a deal with the Israelis? Why should we be supporting him there in prison for the rest of his life? Have we ever been told the true story of Jonathan Pollard? I was very interested. Barry was on one of my programs, another program earlier this week, and I learned things about Jonathan Pollard I'd never heard before. So, without further ado, rather than having me tell you this story, let's go to the source of it. Hi, Barry. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay, let's you pick up the story.
All right. And as you know, in preparation, it was your suggestion to look at Pollard, which is a very good suggestion. And I just went to my books at Pipes Feeley, Zionism, the Holocaust. Chapter 2 is Pollard. And I did my research, strangely enough, I was paid for it by a group who wanted to see Pollard free, who didn't get along with his so-called wife. He's not actually married to her, but I guess when you're imprisoned in solitary long enough, you'll just marry anyone. But she's made it very difficult for individuals to investigate Pollard. She wants the whole show. So they paid me a whole 3,000 shekels, I guess that's about $800, to investigate and find out why he's actually sitting in prison. And, of course, it makes no sense. I mean, he cut a deal with the judge. He revealed everything, and he was supposed to get a plea bargain. He was supposed to get 5 years, but he got life. And here's what I discovered. And by the way, my sources, I was fortunate. I had real good inside sources. A part of the reason was my friend Joel Bainerman had written a book about the Bush family, and believe it or not, it's really relevant. Pollard is really relevant to George Bush the father. And the reason for that is, without Pollard's information, Israel could not have dragged the United States into something known as Iran-Contra. Now, just to remind you of the dates, Pollard started spying in July of 1984, and he was arrested November 13th of 1985. During this period, Bush was vice president of the United States, but he really was president. Reagan had been shot, almost killed, and the word was out that he'll be a window dressing from here on in, and Bush will run all foreign diplomacy, and he did. Now, Pollard started off as a very, very junior employee of naval intelligence. And his original job was to track boats. That's what the Navy does. That's one of the things that the Navy does, is it gets satellite pictures, and it looks for boats that don't have permission to be on the high seas.
Hold that thought there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish telling you the story of Jonathan Pollard. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, back to Pollard looking at these photographs. He noticed a ship that was being loaded in Greece and taking off for Yemen, and I assume this was more than once or twice, but he felt that this was a knowledge that Israel deserved to have by all its contracts with intelligence contracts with the United States and the understandings, but Israel was not going to get this information. And then Pollard was infiltrated. Well, he became an Israeli spy. Now, how it was done, I won't do the whole story of how they got to Pollard, but his handler's name was Rafi Eitan. Rafi Eitan today sits in the Knesset. He has a large party called the Pensioners Party, and he was at the time the head of the Mossad Scientific Bureau, and he was Jonathan Pollard's direct handler. That was Rafi Eitan. Now, next, between 1984 and 1986, the president of Israel was Shimon Peres, and I have no words that can possibly describe what a murderous monster Peres is, but when Pollard was, in fact, he became an Israeli spy, he thought Shimon Peres was an honest leader of Israel. And he thought his information would get in the hands of an honest government. He had an illusion of Israel as being Jewish, therefore honest. And I hate to disillusion him. I assume that he's got the picture now that it was not an honest government. But he passed the information on, assuming that Israel deserves this information and would use the information properly by getting these arms shipments stopped. But when the information got to Israel, the intelligence there concluded that this there was a deal going on. 2 months earlier, a couple of Americans were kidnapped in Beirut, and it looked like the Americans were buying their freedom by selling arms to the enemy. The conclusion was the boats would go to Yemen and then be transferred, the arms would be transferred to Iran, which were the backers of Hezbollah, and they were going to buy their prisoners free. And Peres, well, if he was a good prime minister, if he was an honest prime minister, would do everything in his power to stop this operation government.
Hold the thought there. That our listeners need to be brought up to what you've said. Basically, Pollard, then operating certainly working for the Navy, had noticed there were boats that were going from Greece to Yemen, and they figured that this was really some sort of an arms for hostage deal. Remember, this was during the Iran-Iraqi war. And, of course, the Iranians had kidnapped some Americans, and apparently it looked like what was happening is the Americans, although they swore up and down they would never negotiate for the release of the hostages, were actually then either selling or giving weapons to Iran in exchange for the return of the hostages. And so Jonathan Pollard, as an Israeli spy, sent this information to Israel. And, of course, when it was intercepted, and, of course, the man who got his hands on it was Peres, who was at that time a high government official. Instead of trying to stop the shipments, of course, the shipments to Hezbollah, the shipments to Iran, who was Israel's enemy, why, he decided he was going to make money off of the shipments and allow the shipments to continue to Iran. In fact, maybe get in on this himself. So you pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, it was more than get on this himself. He had the Israeli factor. Now, remember something important. In 1987, Israel had a commission of inquiry into the Jonathan Pollard affair, headed by Abba Eben, who it turns out was honest. He ran an honest commission of inquiry, and he put most of the blame for the Pollard affair on Prime Minister Shimon Peres. 75-80% of the blame was Peres, And little bits were on Defense Minister Rabin and well, he was in the government as well. That was Yitzhak Shamir. But mostly it was Peres.
Oh, no, this was 1997, you said?
87.
Well, he was still, he wasn't arrested until what, 80?
He was arrested in 85.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, just understand how high level this operation was. Rafi Eitan should have gone to the United States and stood trial. But Israel repaid him for his patriotic duty while Pollard, of course, was already on trial and headed for a long prison term, as long as it gets, actually. Rafi Eitan was given the job of CEO of the biggest Israeli company of all, Israel Chemicals, and that was by the Minister of Trade at the time, Ariel Sharon. So this is all very, very high-level spying, but it's not just spying. Here's where things start becoming the Shimon Peres brand was placed on this operation. Peres sees the arms for hostages deal, and he's thinking that in Iran there's 52 students being held, and that there's an endless possibility for making money for arms for hostages. So, in July, when Pollard first sent the information to Israel, there was no team to approach the Bush government. By September, Peres put together his team, his Iran-Contra team, and it was three people: Al Schwimmer, former head of Israel Aircraft Industries; Yaakov Nimrodi, publisher of Mariv newspaper, and this, by the way, is very important, and at the end of the story we'll see how deeply involved the Israeli media is in illegal operations, but he was also the former ambassador to Tehran; and David Kimchi, who was head of the Council on Foreign Relations Israel branch. These three people flew to Washington, met with Bush, and gave him a combination of blackmail. The blackmail being, if you don't play ball, we're going to expose to the American government that you were trading arms for hostages against the will of Congress and the American people in general, and you were arming our worst enemies, and you had the PLO handle the equipment. In other words, they were going to break a scandal that has the potential of, well, at least getting the Reagan-Bush administration in massive trouble. Now, that's if you don't play ball. But if you do play ball, well, Shimon has worked out a way to really expand this arms for hostages deal. Now, remember, if you don't know this, Israel ran cocaine. In the 1980s, Israel trained the Colombian drug lords. That was Colonel Klein who did that. Noriega's top administrators were Israeli. The whole cocaine market from northern South America and Central America was literally in the hands of Israelis. Now, Peres obviously knows how to make himself rich through illegal means, and cocaine was the way to do it. And he employed his Secret Service agents to run cocaine. So the deal he gives to Bush is the following: we go and we convince the Iranians to release all the hostages one by one, not too quick. We want to make lots of money first. And we will supply the Iranians with the arms from the Israeli armory. Excuse me. We will supply Iran with arms from our own arms. And by the way, two shipments of Hawk missiles were sent to Iran. But that's a separate story. And they will pay us. But now here's where Peres gets very creative. Assuming he gets the money from the Iranians, and apparently he did, well, I can go into that story Nimrodi got $37 million from the Iranians. But we won't confuse you with these details. That's, you got to get my book for these little details. But Paris thinks, well, now that we have the money, we can turn into four, five, six times the money just by buying cocaine. It's that simple. Then we sell the cocaine and we launder the money. In this case, it was through Israel Discount Bank in Miami. And we've got a ton of money, most of which we'll keep. It'll go in our back pockets. But the amount that the Iranians paid, well, we're just going to arm the Contras. Now, this was Iran-Contra. Arms for hostages, forget all the cocaine. Ultimately, the money was going to go to the Contras to defeat the Sandinistas, whatever. This was illegal. The fact is that Congress voted down any help from the United States for the Contras. But the George Bush didn't like that. He liked the Contras a whole lot. The Contras were in Nicaragua, which was close to the cocaine supply. So Paris says, you trade the arms, we'll give them the arms. The money will go straight to buying more arms for the Contras, and everybody's happy. And this was Shimon Peres' idea. It was called Iran-Contra. That's what he landed the Bush administration in. The worst scandal. Look, if the truth had come out, we wouldn't have this bozo running the American government today, and Israel wouldn't be on the verge of being wrecked. If Israel gets wrecked, it's not because of Jonathan Pollard. It's because of Shimon Peres abusing Jonathan Pollard. Now, the next stage was a tough one. Pollard was a very minor, junior spy. Well, you don't call him a spy. He was a worker for the Navy intelligence. And the Navy intelligence has a huge archive, which very, very few people have the computer access codes to. My information told me it was called Code Blue, was the access to any file you wanted. Pollard didn't have a Code Blue. Very few people did. And now Israel wanted certain files. And again, you've got billions of files in the Navy archives. Jonathan Pollard would not know where to get the files Israel wanted. And by the way, he had reams of material sent to Israel. Israel had to get someone with access to the Naval Archives, and that person was the National Security Advisor, Bud McFarlane.
But why did McFarlane do that? He wasn't Jewish. Why would he have done that? Was he given money, or was he told by Poindexter and North?
No, they were later.
All right.
Poindexter and North we'll get to. They were in the second stage of this.
Right.
At this point right now, Bud McFarlane, I mean, how does someone become a spy? You blackmail them, you pay them, whatever means are used to tempt a person into this were used on Bud McFarlane. And look, the same techniques were used on James Angleton and Forrester, and they both tried to kill each, well, actually Forrester did kill himself. Angleton, I believe he died in a funny way as well, but Bud McFarlane tried to kill himself with Valiums. He swallowed a bottle full of pills and survived somehow. The point is he became an Israeli spy. And by the way, Esquire magazine printed a long article on the truth behind Iran-Contra where Bud McFarlane was the Mr. X in Washington supplying Pollard with the computer codes. And McFarlane sued Esquire magazine, and he lost in two trials. It went to the American Supreme Court, and he lost there, too. They said Esquire's evidence was not maliciously harming him. As far as they knew, it was accurate evidence that McFarlane was supplying Pollard with the computer access codes that Pollard needed to get the files that Israel wanted.
All right, hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shammet. All right, Barry, pick the story up.
Now, we have to remember that Pollard's first stage of the operation went very smoothly. It went very smoothly till he got caught on November 13th of 1985. Now, on that day, you have Israeli personalities who rose very high in the government, keeping him out of the embassy. One was Eliakim Rubinstein. He was the legal affairs advisor for the embassy. He became the Attorney General of Israel for years and years and years. And then you have Ehud Barak, who was the head of military intelligence, who flew to Washington the day after Pollard was arrested and cut a deal where Pollard went to prison. All these people were involved with Pollard. Forgetting Paris, there were a lot of people aiding and abetting Paris. One was former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who today is the Defense Minister of Israel. And need I remind you that Peres is the president of Israel. They don't want Pollard released. If Pollard knows anything, and he may not, you know, he was so thoroughly used, but the last thing they need is Pollard to be a free man, free to open his mouth. These people are involved in terrible, terrible crimes. But let's go back. Let's all put our minds back into the year 1985 when Pollard is arrested. Now, the first thing that happens is McFarland quits as National Security Advisor. Now, he comes back 6 months later, and for God knows what reason, but he does come back and flies to Tehran with Ali North and someone named Amiram Nir, but we'll get to that shortly. The first thing is all of Peres' team quit. They're gone. Say goodbye to Schwimmer, Kimchi, and Nimrodi. They hauled ass out of there. They didn't want to be trapped in this horrible deal that they had been blackmailing the Reagan-Bush administration. Now, Peres has got a dilemma. On the one hand, without Pollard's information, he didn't have Iran-Contra, but Peres made the ultimate error. Okay, the ultimate error was blackmailing the Bechtel Corporation. Now, this is something people should know because it got out in the United States. Now, what Pollard's information, and by the way, I had a lot of trouble tracing this information down, whether it was from photographs of Baghdad or from the actual business deals, but the Navy knew that Saddam Hussein was producing poison gas using facilities built by the Bechtel Corporation. Now, the information I got is that they built two refineries for Saddam Hussein, petrochemical refineries called P1 and P2, and they were dual-purpose refineries. They might be making all the fine gasoline products that drivers know and love, but they also, in these petrochemical plants, were producing poison gas, and Saddam Hussein was using the poison gas against the Kurds and the Iranians. Pollard gave Peres this material.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in a second. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Barry is bringing out what really got Pollard into problems, and that was that he found out that the Bechtel Corporation had produced some chemical plants in Baghdad that had dual purpose. In other words, they could be used for producing chemical things, but they were also being used for producing poison gas built by Bechtel. And, of course, Bechtel Corporation, remember, Bechtel, of course, George Shultz, a former Secretary of State. The Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan came from Bechtel Corporation and went back to Bechtel Corporation after he left the Reagan administration. George Shultz is one of the major movers and shakers of our time. In fact, he's the man who actually picked George W. Bush to become the president. He checked him out and told the powers that be that George W. Bush was ready to be the president of the United States, and he was one of his initial advisors. Well, Jonathan Pollard Now has fingered Bechtel Corporation is building the chemical weapons plants, or the plants that are being used to produce chemical weapons, that are being used to kill the Kurds, being used to kill the Iranians, and he gets that information to Simon Perez. Go ahead.
Well, it's more than just Schultz. Schultz was on the board of Bechtel, and he resigned when he took public office. But this he was Secretary of State, by the way, while this was going on. But much more serious was the Secretary of Defense at the time, Caspar Weinberger. He was the vice president of Bechtel, who resigned when he took public office. In other words, now, you can say thanks to Pollard, that Pollard didn't know he was doing this stuff. But he paid for it. He's sitting in prison for a lot of very, very high-ranking officials who aren't sitting in prison and whose careers are better than ever. Caspar Weinberger was VP of Bechtel. George Shultz was on the board of Bechtel. And Perez was blackmailing both of them because they were producing poison gas through the Bechtel P1 and P2 refineries in Baghdad. And by the way, this leads to other issues about how much the American government was building up Saddam Hussein, and the fact that during the first Gulf War, those airstrikes were against American targets. They were wiping out the evidence. But let's not jump too far ahead. The fact is that these people, when they found out that that Pollard was the source of the information, just went bananas on Pollard. But first, let's go to the discovery. What Perez did, what his blackmail was. Now, Bechtel, I don't think Bechtel was planning to build an oil pipeline, but Iraq needed one. Because at that time, the Iranians had blockaded the Persian Gulf, and their ally, the Syrians, had closed up the oil pipeline from Iraq to Latakia on the Mediterranean coast, so Iraq couldn't sell its oil. They had no outlet to get their oil out. And now, whether it was Bechtel, whether they were planning such an oil pipeline, or whether Perez invented the oil pipeline, it doesn't matter. There was going to be an oil pipeline built from Iraq to the Jordanian port of Aqaba on the Gulf of Elax. And Perez promised Bechtel that, well, promised. He blackmailed him. He said that Israel would never bomb the pipeline, even in the event of war, for a mere $700 million.
Was that a one-time payment or a year?
No, 10 years.
$70
million a year paid annually from the American defense budget. That's how they were planning to pay it. You can steal $70 million annually for 10 years, and all of the money was going to go to the Israeli Labor Party. Now,
That was Perez's party, I assume.
Of course.
Go ahead.
And I assume he had a checkbook that he could withdraw funds from that from the Labor Party as well. He was, of course, head of the Labor Party. I assume it was ultimately all to Perez, but he wanted to checkmate to the Israeli Labor Party, grand total of $700 million. Not to bomb the Bechtel pipeline. Now, people, it was discovered in America. The reason is the proposal was presented to the American Attorney General, Edwin Meese, and it got out in the Los Angeles Times that Israel had blackmailed the American government and that Edwin Meese had received the blackmail notice and was considering it. He admitted that, yes, Israel had proposed insuring the pipeline. They called it insuring the pipeline.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Barry, did the Labor Party, the Israeli Labor Party, ever get any part of that $700 million?
Well, no, because the pipeline wasn't built. No point in insuring a pipeline that doesn't exist. But the reason it wasn't built is that Edwin Meese, the exposure of Edwin Meese considering this bribe from Israel cost him his job. Now, people, I have a little suggestion for the more ambitious among you. Go to Google, Yahoo, whatever, write an Edwin Meese pipeline and watch that he quit his job. He quit his job. He was forced to resign. That's how you lost Edwin Meese's attorney general, was over this pipeline deal, that he was even considering this bribe. Now, in Israel, what happened to Paris? Absolutely nothing. Now, I want to remind you about the Eben Commission. Abba Eben investigated Jonathan Pollard in 1987, and Paris was the villain. And when the results came in from the Eben Commission, there was tremendous pressure on Paris to resign. For one solid week, he smeared Abba Eben, calling him a liar every second sentence, and then Abba Eben was finished in politics. He was taken off the Labor Party list. He was finished. It was the end of the career of Abba Eben. Paris arranged that. And life went on as usual, and now he's president of Israel. This mega crook ultimately became the president of Israel. But now we have a changing of the guard. Everyone's taken off once Pollard is arrested. Schwimmer, Kimke, Nimrodi, they're all gone. Meese is gone. Now, what they do in America is the new guard includes Ollie North and John Poindexter. Much more North than Poindexter. And in Israel, Paris phones up the publisher of Yediot Achronot, the largest newspaper by far in Israel, and he wants his son-in-law, Abiram Nir, to be his new anti-terror advisor. Abiram Nir was married to the publisher's daughter, Judy Moses. What Peres' ties to the Israeli media? Remember, Nimrodi was publisher of the second biggest newspaper, Ma'ariv, and now he's going to the biggest newspaper for his new advisor, Abiram Nir. Nir is the one who
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, what happened, of course, when this whole story blew up about the effort to blackmail America into giving the Labor Party of Israel $700 million, why Ed Meese was forced to resign as Attorney General. Remember, this was during the Reagan years, and of course, over in Israel, they cleaned house, but Peres stays right on top of this, and Peres is still one of the dominant forces over there. They have an investigation of the arrest of Jonathan Pollard, and the gentleman who actually came forward, led the investigation, told the truth, why, of course, his political career is ended. All right, so pick up the story from there.
Well, now Ollie North flies to Israel, where Amiram Nir buys a cake, believe it or not. They buy a cake from a Tel Aviv bakery, and then they go flying off to Tehran, where, by the way, the meetings were taped, and you can actually hear North and Nir negotiating with the Iranians over arms and how to pay for them and whatever else. This is the part of the story the American media got. You got Ollie North and going to Tehran, but what you didn't get was Amiram Nir's version of the story, because Amiram Nir met George Bush in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, where they discussed Iran-Contra. Now, if you remember, Bush claimed over and over again that he knew nothing about Iran-Contra, that it was a rogue operation, and he dismissed that Ollie North had anything to do with him. This was how they got out of this horrible scandal. And by the way, Abba Eban fully threw water on the rogue operation scandal when he said that Perez read Jonathan Pollard's intelligence first thing in the morning. He says before he started his day of work, he would get Pollard's information and work around it and plan his day around it. So, I mean, the rogue operation was just silly. And Poindexter, of course, was too high up. So North got most of the blame, and in America, he put on his silly colonel's uniform and appealed to the patriotism in the audience, and he got away with it. It's incredible. The American public bought this stuff from Ollie North.
Well, I think, of course, the big thing, Barry, was that a lot of people in America really thought that we were fighting communism, after all. First, people have forgotten that that we actually toppled the government there, the Somoza government. We brought the communists to power, and then, of course, we put the communists in power in Nicaragua by toppling the communists, and then we formed the anti-communist government. That's the anti-communist movement. That's the Contras. The United States House of Representatives and Senate said, we're not going to send any monies down to the Contras. So the president said, we're not going to abide by the will of the elected representatives. We're a government unto ourselves. We're going to come up with a means of funding or providing arms for the Contras to fight the communists that we'd installed in Nicaragua. And it's this old idea of funding both sides, but the American people were never smart enough to figure that out. So pick the story up from there.
Well, Amiram Nir is going to testify in Washington at the Committee on Iran-Contra, was headed by Lee Hamilton, and he was only 3 days away. Perez ordered him to clear out his desk. I have the last interview with Amiram Nir, where he said that Shamir did try and protect his name and his reputation, but Perez threw him to the dogs. Perez ordered him murdered. That's what happened, because 3 days before he was going to fly to Washington, Amiram Nir was in Mexico. He had an avocado business. Don't even ask how he got into the avocado business. He just was. And he went up in a little plane, and everyone survived the crash. The pilot, the co-pilot, and a Mossad spy, who my friend Joel interviewed, she lives in Hamilton, Ontario. I guess she was the bait to get him on this plane. It was never thoroughly explained, but nonetheless, he died in the plane crash. That was the end of Amiram Nir, and that was the end of any chance that the truth would be told. The truth was, what was America doing dealing cocaine? Okay, there was that one little aspect of Iran-Contra that was not as simple as freeing hostages in Iran, taking the money and buying arms for the Contras. It was that middleman, the cocaine buying, which, by the way, a number of American writers, Terry Reed had a very famous expose of the cocaine smuggling. That was all part of Iran-Contra. That was the Bush family. That was the Clinton family, too, by the way. The planes were landing in Mena, Arkansas. It was the whole American administration was sucked into Iran-Contra. And that would never have happened without Jonathan Pollard's intelligence.
In fact, they targeted Terry Reid. I talked to the man, his name is L.D. Brown. He was hired by the CIA to kill Terry Reid. He didn't do it. And Terry Reid, the last thing I know, was still alive. And then, of course, another fellow wrote about it, was Gary Webb, and he eventually committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead.
Well, you've got to make sure you're dead if
right.
you commit suicide.
Right. Go right ahead.
Well, there's another person who died, too, besides Amiram Nir and Gary Webb, for that matter, and that was the judge. Now, Pollard has a trial. Now, try and understand how hopping mad Weinberger and Schultz are, Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, when they find out that they've been blackmailed for 2 years from information coming from Jonathan Pollard. And Casper Weinberger does something very dirty, and towards the end of his life, he tried to fix it up a bit. Pollard had a black judge in Florida, and he cut a deal with him. He said he would reveal all for a shortened sentence, about 5 years. And lo and behold, Weinberger, the night before the verdict, the judge is going to render sentencing, shows up, has a meeting with the judge, where all reports have it that Weinberger says that Pollard's information went straight to South Africa, and the South Africans were using it to repress blacks. He used that information to make sure the judge gave him life imprisonment. And that was not the deal that Pollard cut with the courts. And people have forgotten that he had a plea bargain going, and the courts reneged on it. But the judge had a change of heart. Pollard's attorneys submitted an appeal that this sentence was against the plea bargain. And by the way, in any normal court of law, they would have one heck of a case. I believe it was two weeks before the appeal was heard, the black judge, and it's in my book, Schepeitz v. Labor Zionists and the Holocaust, all the names are in it. I have to reread it. But he was killed, the black judge was killed. 2 weeks before the appeal was heard, he was murdered. And that was it. Pollard's last chance to have a fair hearing went down with this judge. So there is another murder surrounding Jonathan Pollard. Now, I think we should recall something. The conservatives in the United States, what you may call the neocons, in the year 1985, when Pollard was captured, said, "The hell with Israel." He said, "We're going to finish that state off." They were furious beyond words, ultimately at Paris. Pollard got the life imprisonment, and Paris is now president of Israel, which shows you how justice works. Pollard is sitting for very powerful people, but the conservatives, led by Weinberger, Schultz, and by the way, James Baker was also in on Bechtel, and he was also in on this. They said when Bush becomes president, which he did in '88, says we're going to finish off Israel. Enough is enough. That's it for Israel. And it was it. We're watching the end of the so-called neocon diplomacy. It's been step by step from Madrid to Oslo to the horrible state of affairs has been deliberately and purposely directed to bring Israel, well, to put it out of its misery. I mean, the state right now is in its death throes, and that can be directly attributed not to Jonathan Pollard, but to the documents that he supplied to Shimon Peres, which to this day have not gone away. The goal to get rid of Israel came out of Jonathan Pollard.
But not it wasn't what he wanted. It was a result of what he did, and the fact that Shimon Peres actually used his information to antagonize these people in America.
He most certainly did. Worked like a charm. You know, before I go on with the last part, I'm just going to tell you, your audience, how to get this book. Schepeitz v. Labor Zionism and the Holocaust has got a chapter. Chapter 2 is all Pollard. And if you go to lulu.com, lulu.com, in the right-hand corner it says search, right in my name, that's C-H-A-M-I-S-H, Chamish. And you'll get to the books. This book is about $10 to put to your computer and about $20 to have sent to your house, a nice copy. And you can read the details of what they did to Pollard. There are some details on my website, barrychamish.com, but get the book. It's a lot better. It's better ordered than my website can ever do. Now we go to the horrible fact that Iran-Contra was was officially closed in 1992 when in his last days in office, President George Bush pardoned Caspar Weinberger. Weinberger was going to go on trial for all kinds of stuff surrounding Iran-Contra, lots and lots of stuff, but he was pardoned by Bush. Now, Weinberger, he's dead now, but before he died, he opened his mouth and he said that Pollard got blamed for a lot of things out of anger, and he really wasn't guilty of them. I mean, he was accused of betraying American spies to the Soviets, of getting dozens of spies killed in Moscow. That was actually the spy Ames who did that, who had nothing to do with Pollard. They didn't even know each other. But everything possible was done to ruin Pollard and to justify sitting in jail for a lifetime when essentially his only crime was passing information to an ally, which all government understandings stated that the ally gets this information. Pollard's role was mostly decent and patriotic. He was also a little greedy and he liked the good life, but forgetting all that, we have to remember one important thing, and I don't know how they did this, and that is Pollard's so-called wife, Esther. She has made sure that he will sit forever and ever. Every action she's taken looks like it's for Pollard, and in fact, she interferes with anything that will get Pollard out of prison. Now, how much time do we have?
Oh, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes.
Okay. I'll just do the overall, because I want to touch on Israel this week, as is my policy and rule.
Before we go on, though, do you want to get out your telephone number so people would know how to get to your website, how to get to you, and get your other material?
Well, the one thing you can't get on Lulu are my DVDs, and one is 124 radio shows from last year. The other is the other most popular one is the Vatican's Crusade Against Modern Jerusalem. Just give me a call, 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. And we'll get you those DVDs at a very reasonable price. Now back to the coup de grace. To make sure that Pollard stays in prison, he's got a so-called wife. There was never, the prison authorities have stated this over and over again. There was never a rabbi, never a license, never a witness. There was no marriage between the two. It's nonsense. They want to call themselves married, that's fine. They're not married. Esther Pollard, his so-called wife, has a history, a psychopathic history. Her previous husband was interviewed by Haaretz magazine, and he said that during their brief marriage, she did everything in her power to make sure he never saw his family, that everything he knew before was going to go away, and she would be the sole custodian of her husband. She's done the same thing with Jonathan Pollard. His father died. Both parents are dead now, and they had not seen him in years. She had cut him off from his natural allies, his family, anyone who ever loved him personally, she cut him off from, and she gave him the world's worst advice. Now, here is an example sent to me by Susan Rosenthal. She is the editor of the Jewish Voice and Opinion of New Jersey. She said that, I forget his first name, Lucians, whatever. Pollard was offered a way out. And believe it or not, Bill Clinton and Senator Joseph Lieberman, had agreed when Clinton was president, had agreed that if he apologizes, Clinton will grant him a pardon. And he was willing to apologize, and why shouldn't he? He actually was spying against the United States, and he should apologize. She advised him never to apologize. He had nothing to apologize for. He didn't meet with Lieberman and Clinton, even though he had a way to be free. Anything to keep him in prison is Esther Pollard's point of view with Jonathan Pollard. And he is just too alone to understand what's been done to him. She turned him into an Orthodox Jew. The guy was secular. His first wife was secular. The guy's got nothing to do with Orthodoxy. She molded and manipulated him and turned him into her own image, and he will never see the light of day, as Caspar Weinberg once promised him, ever again, because I don't know who arranged this marriage. I don't know if it was legitimate or if she was planted. But her actions highly suggest that she was planted.
Well, of course, we really can't say, but anyway, we'll be back in just a moment for Barry to wrap up his program. All right, Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Yeah, I just had a call from... I had a few calls from Israel today. I had a busy day.
No, how are things,
a doctor friend of mine, Dr. Backlund is his name, attended a meeting in the Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem, where every hospital, including his hospital, his happens to be the biggest, they were all told to be on alert in the month of April. Coming up, all hospitals in Israel have been warned to be on alert. They weren't told why. But leaves have been canceled, vacations have been canceled. They're getting ready for a lot of wounded people in Israel's hospitals. And just to let you know, there's going to be a national alert next week in Israel. And it's going to last for several days, which includes sirens and people running to shelters and hospitals working with firemen and ambulances. And they've got scenarios where a rocket hits a hospital and how do you get the most seriously wounded out. And all of this is being done. Everything in the air is talking about something bad happening in April. Now, again, this is not me prophesizing. This is information coming back to me that suggests that you've got a threat of something excruciating happening to Israel next month.
Well, that, of course, is very, very disconcerting to hear that. And yet, of course, everything I read that suggests that Israel is on the verge of war with its neighbors.
Well, it's a war unlike any other war. It's a war that they have no way of stopping. It's not a war in a battlefield. You're not fighting tanks. You're fighting rockets and missiles. Now, up till now, the Palestinians have been totally confused and are saying Israel is lying about the number of wounded. All these leftists say, look, there were 150 Palestinians killed and only 2 Israelis. Well, that doesn't stop the fact that 7,000 missiles and rockets have been shot at Sderot and Ashkelon in the last few years, and the Palestinians are openly saying that Israel is lying about the number of dead. And I'll tell you something, the fact that the number of dead after 7,000 rockets is as low as it is nothing short of miraculous. Nothing short of miraculous. The figure is so low.
Well, I certainly believe that God is over there. He's giving him protection, because otherwise 7,000 rockets certainly would have killed a lot more people. We're out of time, Barry. God bless. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, all.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was just saying he got a call from a doctor today over in Israel who told him that they were been instructed to be on alert for this next month or so, that they're expecting a lot of casualties in April to be prepared for it. So whether there is a war imminent over there, we just will have to wait and see. But certainly Barry always has fascinating information. Remember, the views that he expresses are his own, not necessarily those of this station or my views at all. But he is a fascinating source of information, and through the years, most of his information has been very accurate. Well, under any circumstances, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're certainly dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us. So if you agree with me that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, economic, financial, educational battlefield, we hope many of you will decide to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and become part of our team. Again, the number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is not under attack from without, but from within, and from within by very powerful forces. What are these forces? Well, they're the front organizations for what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. We can talk about the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, Bilderbergers. We can talk about the Masons. We can talk about Skull and Bones. We can talk about so many of the organizations and secret societies that are really out there, but behind all of them are powerful Luciferian forces. And behind them are supernatural forces, and there really is a supernatural component to society. And until we recognize that, you can't understand any of the things that are going on. As Barry Shamish was just talking about, 7,000 rockets have been fired at Israel over the last few months, and there have only been 2 people killed. 7,000 rockets, 2 people killed. I believe God still does interfere in the affairs of men. And I believe God is protecting Israel. I don't know what's going to happen when the next war comes, but, well, we're just going to have to wait and see. I believe God's intervened in the past and has protected Israel, and I believe he has the people of Israel there, Israelis there for a purpose at this time, and something's going to happen that's caused many of them, first of all, to turn back to God, and I believe many of them will eventually become Christians. At least those are the prophecies, and certainly we see so many of the other prophecies being played out today. Revelation 6:8 that talks about the rider of the pale horse, a quarter of the world's population will be killed by the sword and by hunger and by pestilence and by the beasts of the earth. And we see the evidence of famine. We see rising across the world. We see massive floods. We see certainly the very real possibility of a nuclear war. And, of course, we're doing everything we can to build up the capacity of communist China to attack us, to build up their military capacity, to transfer our most important military secrets to communist China. Why would you do something like that? Unless, of course, nothing is as it appears to be. And everything is being directed by demonic forces, satanic forces, that are laying the foundation for World War III. Well, I hope that you want to get the material that we have available at Radio Liberty, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, our talk on the forbidden secret, our talk on certainly the secret, I should say our 4-tape set, a 4-CD set on the secret behind the secret, the book, Satanic Crimes, which takes you into the Bilderbergers, and the 4-tape set on, or CD set on Satanic Crimes, the 4-tape set on the supernatural, the book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil. We really have really hundreds of books we make available if you're interested in medicine and certainly how the drug companies are being used to destroy our society. A Marshall Angel book, Dr. Marshall Angel's What You Should Know About the Drug Companies, fascinating book by the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine and on the staff at Harvard, who's been so harassed she won't even answer emails. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.